Ladies and gentlemen, we do thank you very much for your attention, and now we invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy the takeoff. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, homesick listeners, homesickers, sickos, sicklets? Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. Hope everybody's having a fabulous day out there. Just wanted to go over a couple things before we get into this episode. First off, I want to let you know that I'm going to take that first Iraq segment and re-record it / chop it up into smaller pieces. I'm also going to work on my delivery. After listening to it, realized it was extremely monotonous, monotone. It just wasn't great. So I'll work on my delivery. Hopefully it'll taste better on your end. Second, just want to say thanks to everybody for tuning in. My whole goal with this thing is to reach out and connect with people. So if you like the podcast, awesome. Share it with a friend. Leave some feedback for me on Anchor or Instagram Homesick Podcast. I know Anchor has a little feature where you can leave me a voice message. So if you want to do something cool, tell me where you're at, what you're doing today, something cool about your life, whatever. Shout out, reach out to me. Use the voice message feature, and I might just add it to the intro of the next episode if you send something cool. So, yeah. Anyway, my guest today, this episode was actually recorded about 4 months ago, 5 months ago maybe, over the summer, when I first started having the idea of creating a podcast. I met a really cool young woman named Michelle as she was passing through Fort Collins, Colorado in her converted van with her dog, Rhea. They were just getting to the end of a 3 month, I want to say, 3 or 4 month, 15,000 mile van dwelling adventure around the United States. She's from Pennsylvania. So, yeah. She humored me, and we recorded this episode beside Watson Reservoir in Bellevue, Colorado. There we go. Watson Reservoir. Pretty cool spot. You got a lake on one side of the road. You got the Cache La Poudre River on the other side. This is just me and Michelle chopping it up about customizing our vehicles, which mine at the time, I had this 6x10 cargo trailer that you can see on Instagram. Sold that since, doing the van thing now, which we go over in this episode, actually, the exact version of what I ended up with, ironically. Anyway, without further ado. So what made you want to travel around the country?
Actually, something that's been on my radar for a little while now. I did the Colorado Trail last summer. So that was like kind of my first big adventure. And probably got hooked on travel with that. And I would have done a longer trail this summer, but with graduating and taking the boards and trying to find a job, that like wasn't really a good time to be out of touch for 6 months. Kind of need to be like, at least have half a foot in real life. So like 2 years ago, my sister turned me on to the whole like van life movement, basically, and started showing me all these pictures on Instagram and people just living in these super cute vehicles that they've converted, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. But at that point, I was not at all in a position in my life that that was really like an option or something I could do then, between going to school and being where I was at and being kind of tied down in Pennsylvania. Wasn't going to happen. So when things changed and I was graduating, it's like kind of still had it on the back burner in my mind of something that would be cool to do, and knew that I wanted to do something this summer and not just like jump straight into work. So in February, I decided to start looking and like, okay, I'm going to do this kind of basically. Let me back up. In December, at the end of the year, I met someone who was living in like a 1990 Vandura style, like just old basic van that was serving him just fine. He'd done like a real basic conversion. It wasn't like, you know, one of the really nice Instagram worthy, everything's coordinated and looks great together, but I mean, totally functional. And he'd been living out of it for like 7 months at that point, and so we got to talking, and that kind of like changed my perspective on what it would actually need and what you would have to do to, you know, just make it happen for a little bit. And so got back to Pennsylvania after meeting him and kind of committed to doing this. So found a van, bought it from a guy in Ohio. Would be one of the lessons that I learned. Yeah, so it turns out Ohio is one of those states where most of the state does not require a inspection of any sort for vehicles. So you don't really know what you're getting. The sale price was great, but I got it from a guy who, God, I don't even remember the story he gave me, but met him at like his aunt's vacant house. And he had just driven it there because he didn't live there. He was missing a couple teeth. And it was like later in the day on a Sunday. I didn't have cash, so I took it for a test drive. It's like, okay, like, I mean, it seems pretty legit. I knew it was going to need some stuff, but whatever. And so went back and made him an offer, and he was all too happy to get rid of it. So like went and found an ATM that was not really close by because we're out in the middle of nowhere in Ohio. And got the cash and drove the thing home.
Out of the ATM, huh? Yep. Sounds like a good sale price.
I should tell you something. Yep. So it needed a little more work than I thought. Definitely some lessons learned there. But it's been worth it. Overall, it's been more reliable, really, than I could have hoped. And I'll be, you know, in, like, down a dirt road in the state forest, national forest in Washington, just, like, thinking if this guy could only see where this van is now, like, coming from probably sitting in a field or in someone's driveway for however many years in Ohio to, like, I mean, we've been all over the country at this point. I think I've put almost 15,000 miles on it.
Nice.
With, like, been a few big ticket items, but, like, I don't know. At this point, I think I have a pretty good vehicle. If I were to do it again, I definitely would have just gone straight cargo van. Like, this was a conversion van that was pretty gross. Inside it was pink. Really nice color pink, and someone had definitely smoked in it at one point, and it was gross. And it started out as like, I'm just gonna take the seats out and put a bed in the back and leave the carpet and leave the interior and everything else. And then I was in there and I was taking the seat out and like ripped part of the upholstery on the wall, and the foam and everything behind it was just like disintegrating every time you touched the walls. Like, it just kind of like foam just would come through the fabric and just be so gross. So, yeah, it quickly went from, let me just take the seat out, to I'm going to take the walls down and rip everything off the ceiling and rip the carpet out. And so everything from the front seats back has been, like, completely gutted and redone. But it's great now.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. Like, I didn't think, like, I knew this was going to be a project and that I generally get frustrated during projects. But 80, 90% of the time I was putting all this together, I was smiling.
Yeah, because it was like kind of fun. This
sense of satisfaction.
Absolutely, and like you're doing this with your hands, mm-hmm. and it just kind of comes together in the end, and it's totally your project. You can do whatever you want and set it up like just the way that's going to work for you without worrying about what anyone else is going to think. And I'm glad I didn't go all out. Like, as much as I love the ones that you see on Instagram that are, you know, just so freaking cute, it's like, that's awesome, but I'm glad I got to see that something more basic can work too. It doesn't have to be, you know, this crazy super involved project. It can just be, I mean, I've built...
What do you mean, just more like hideaway storage?
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that.
Yep. But so I have like, I have storage for my clothes on the side, and then I built a bed frame in the back, which is kind of key, and there's storage under there, and most of my stuff fits under there. And then I just have a counter sort of behind the driver's seat that stretches from the bed to the driver's seat, and have storage in there, and that's where, like, my kind of mini kitchen area, and I cook and keep food there. And that's about it. And I've been amazed at how comfortable I've been in there and how functional it is. And my front seat, that was one of my upgrades. So there were two bucket seats behind the front seats, and they both swivel, but the front seats didn't. And so when I was ripping them out, I swapped out the pedestals, and there's just like this ring with ball bearings in it, and that's all that it needs to swivel. And so when I was ripping the back ones out, I took the pedestal from those and swapped it with the front passenger seat. So now the front passenger seat swivels around.
You didn't show me that.
I know, I did. Whenever I park for more than like, super, super simple. I like didn't think it was going to work at first, but I was like, I'm just going to try this because it's nice to be able to do that. And then it's really comfortable. You can have someone hang out on the bed in the back. You spin the front seat around, have, you know, a good bit of foot room in there.
That's impressive. Leg room.
Get comfortable. It reclines a little bit so you can hang out there and like read a book.
That's awesome. Good on you.
Yep.
And destination after Colorado, you think you're going to start heading back east?
Possibly. Part of me still wants to go hit the Northern California coast, but part of me thinks I should head up to Vermont and see what's going on with job prospects there.
Still got some summer left.
I do.
You don't have to get back to work yet.
Probably don't have to start work until like the beginning of September. So definitely still have some flexibility in the schedule.
I love the afternoon thunderstorms out here.
Love them when I'm not above tree line.
Yeah.
It's a daily occurrence, and you're at 12 or 13,000 feet. It's less awesome.
Have you done some of the big peaks out here or Washington?
The only 14er I've done in Colorado is San Luis, I think the name of it is, in the Lagarita Wilderness. It's like right along the trail. It's one of the easiest ones to just like pop up and do in the morning. I think it's less than a mile to the summit trail, so I did that one on a very foggy day, unfortunately, so didn't quite get the view. It's funny, because Lagarita, I think, means the view or the beautiful view. It's something to that effect, and
not
literally,
the foggy view.
No, I went through that area on, like, it was probably the three foggiest days I had on the trail. Like, you couldn't see. There was one day I was going through, like, these willow bushes, and you could not see 100 feet, like, in front of or behind you. I could people. It was funny because I could like hear people either in front of me or like down off the trail. There was a couple of other spurs that left it, and I could hear them, and they didn't sound very far, but I never saw another soul going through there. And it's supposed to be like one of the prettiest sections of the trail. Like, yeah, I'm gonna need to go back.
That works out sometimes. Yep. I guess.
Yep. But
still, you had a better day than a lot of people that day.
I'm sure.
The worst day in the woods is still better than best day in the office, yep. Right?
It was cool because it was an area where there are like these hoodoos kind of up along the, like above the trail.
It's a hoodoo?
It's a crazy rock formation.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about an animal.
They look like, no, they're rocks. And they're like sort of columns of rocks, but they kind of stand independently. They look weird. If you don't know what they are, look them up so you can see a picture of them. But I was going through an area where there were a bunch of hoodoos on this really foggy, misty day, and it was like otherworldly because that was all you could see. It was like foggy, and then there's just like these profiles of these crazy rock formations that you kind of see near you or kind of up like up the hillside above you.
Yeah,
it was wild. Beautiful though.
That's how I like being out in the ski areas in the middle of the night. When you can just see the outlines of these mountains, you know?
Sure.
But, you know, like, during the daytime, it's, like, those just awe-inspiring views.
Yep.
And, yeah, I don't know. I really like it at night. Giants out there in the snow. Before you said you went on a run this morning, I was thinking if you wanted to go do a horse tooth either in the evening.
Are you broke your ankle?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've already been back up. I love that place. I love it. I just walk really slowly past that one corner. Yeah, watch my step a little more now.
How far is it? How long is it?
It's nice. It's a nice short little one. Like to drive there, it only takes 20 minutes from Fort Collins. And then the hike, I could run it in 40 on a really good day. So the hike is like an hour and a half probably.
Okay.
Walking.
That's about right.
To get up. Yeah.
That's one way.
But, yeah, that's one way. But you already did Grey Rock. That's like a 5-hour hike or something.
Four.
Yeah. Well, it'll take me five.
Which I did not. I thought it was going to take me three, so.
Were you like half jogging?
Way off.
Speed walking?
No, but like it's. I think my mileage was off. That sign at the trailhead says it's like 4 miles. So there's a loop, and then there's like the spur trail that actually goes up to the summit. I forget what the one is, but the other one's like the Meadows Trail, and it's like a little bit more gradual of a climb that way, but a little bit longer. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. It was like 4 miles that way. I thought it said to the summit and 3 miles the other way. I'm like, 7 miles, that's reasonable. A pretty average hiking pace for me is like 3 miles an hour. So in 3 hours, I should have been able to do 9 miles. I think I was like just over 3 hours up there.
Well, that last section, a lot of climbing.
Yeah. But then there's a lot of downhill. And there's a lot of like sort of flat in the Meadows area. I don't know, it was beautiful. Other than the poison ivy, I don't know how people do that hike and don't get poison ivy if you're allergic to it.
Yeah, I thought I got poison ivy the other week in the canyon. I had a little starting, and then I just ignored it and didn't touch it. I was up in the canyon camping.
Yep.
And it went away, so.
Have you ever had poison ivy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this shit's crazy back east.
Sure. Some people, it's like they look at it and get it, too.
One thing you would do differently?
So one thing I would do differently, if I were to do it over, or if I was going to be in it longer term. Right now, it's looking like it'll be like a 4 month venture for me. Long term, I would definitely do some kind of roof vent. Just because that makes, I mean, I have pretty good ventilation between all the windows that pop open and the couple that slide with a screen, but like, to be able to have, especially a roof vent with a fan, so you really like get that negative or positive airflow, whatever you're going for, would make a huge difference.
For sure.
Fresh air and temperature control. But because I don't have any holes in the roof, I have not had any problems with leaking. That was actually, it's funny you say that, before I went the van route, I was looking at restoring like a 1980s, maybe 90s RV. Actually, an RV, get like a little 22 foot something. The Toyota RVs are pretty cute. But I don't know, then you're just dealing with like all these systems, the water and the plumbing and the gas and whatever else is in there, the tanks, everything that's been in there for 30, 40 years at this point. Yeah. Like, there's a lot that can go wrong with that. And turns out I don't need most of it. But exactly. I know those are known for having water damage. And like, that's one of the things with restoring them is you usually end up gutting some walls and redoing insulation because stuff growing and you don't want mold growing in your walls.
No.
Just a cargo van. I think a white cargo van is the way to do it. I mean, the high tops and the sprinters and the ProMasters and everything else are nice if you want to be able to get around, get up and walk around in them. But like,
you're talking about just a 12 passenger Dodge van?
Yep. Cargo van. You can park anywhere. I guess it depends on what you want.
I've seen somebody's got a Dodge van in town that they did a homemade roof raise on.
Okay.
It's just got like, I mean, it looks like something they bought, like a fiberglass type thing, but then they cut the roof.
Yep.
And then planted this fiberglass, gives them another like 2 feet or something, maybe not that much. But
they make them up to that tall, and you can buy like, I think, Turtle Top. I don't know if that's a brand or just what they call it, but yeah, basically that. Like if you want to take a van and make it have a raised roof, that's an option. I don't know, I love being able to just park. Like, you want to park downtown, you want to park anywhere. It doesn't say there's no overnight parking.
It's so weird that it's a big deal, whether like someone's sleeping in it or not.
I know.
Like, it has no effect on what's going on outside the vehicle. But for some reason, if there's somebody sleeping in their vehicle, it's a problem.
Maybe.
And if it's just a vehicle parked, it's not as much of a problem.
I feel like as long as you don't make it super obvious that there is someone inside, and you're not bothering anybody, you probably won't be bothered yourself. I've definitely been in areas that you are not allowed to sleep in a vehicle overnight. And no one's ever come and knocked on my door.
Yeah. It's still a thing.
Yeah.
What do you think is the ideal situation? Because I don't think we have enough. First of all, houses just aren't affordable.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then I don't think it's feasible for everybody to own their own 2,000 square foot house. Like, there's just not
without. There's not going to be enough room at some point.
So in my utopia that I've been envisioning, a lot of the people are doing what we're doing and just traveling around. Get to see all kinds of different stuff. But I'm done crashing in Walmart parking lots.
I know. You can only do that for so long.
Yeah.
So the same thing kind of goes, like, I love the idea of a tiny house. I think a tiny house is, like, a perfect solution. It's just enough space. You can do it. You can do it permanently. I think they have a lot going for them. But they're, I don't know where people park them. Maybe that's just something I'm missing. I don't know what you do with a tiny house. Like, you could go to an RV park. But if you don't want to do that, if you just want to, like, park on a lot or have somewhere, I wish there were communities that you could do.
There's a couple in Colorado I've heard about.
Do you have to be in them permanently, though? Because I'd like to just go and be there for, like, a month.
I think it works like an RV park like that.
So it'd be awesome if that was more widespread. Because coming from Pennsylvania and the East Coast, I've never heard of that being a thing. So that's always been my issue with a tiny house. Like, a tiny house is perfect. But seriously, what do you do with it? And where do you hook up to water and power other than an RV park, which is fine, but, like, maybe not everyone's first choice.
I just don't like the rent idea. The whole point of doing this whole
and
thing
then again,
is so you don't,
right.
And then they're going to charge you for a spot in the dirt.
Yep.
And, like, a water and power hookup, which...
5 feet away from your neighbor on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can charge my phone off my car.
Like, yeah.
I don't need your power.
No. Water is nice sometimes, but, like, not necessary. You can go a while without it.
So we just need, like, little oases.
Yeah.
For, is that plural of oasis? Oasis.
I have to look that one up.
Yeah, you just need somewhere you can, like, pull in and camp without it being a problem.
Right.
Maybe a little store.
Yeah.
You can, like, grab
supplies.
We're
going, like, full commune style.
Yeah. I'm all about that idea, too. Except I envision that somewhere in South America with tree houses. A treehouse community.
Oh, yeah, I can get down with that.
Mm-hmm.
We're back 20, to being monkeys.
20, 30 people. You either gotta, you know, hunt, grow food, make clothes.
Pull your own weight in some way.
Make shelters.
That'd be awesome. Why does it have to be in South America?
I don't know. It's just where I picture it. I picture these really big jungle trees. And that's what the Sebastian Younger, that's like the key thing he keeps coming back to is... You have to be within a group of friends or a community where everybody is supporting everybody. And that's what we lack today.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all totally impersonal. You go to the store and you buy your groceries and
don't look anybody in the eye.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can just look at the floor and make your money your whole life and you can survive like
that.
Oh, that
sounds so miserable. It's an interesting read. Story or basic premise is it kind of looks at, like, people's role in the world. Like, what is our role? What is our species here to do? And whether we acknowledge it or not, we kind of take on this role as ruler of the world.
Yeah.
But why? And what if we're wrong? And it kind of, like, proposes an alternative.
I think we're totally wrong. It's arrogant as fuck.
Absolutely. And as soon as you identify that, like, that is in fact the case, that, like, that is how people see themselves, as soon as you acknowledge that, it's like, yeah, what is wrong with us?
Yeah. Yeah, we're super special monkeys that can't do shit except think really hard and invent crazy machines. And... still gets down through the flex seal or whatever, but
a lot better than it was.
It's not like it's a $100,000 house.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine.
It's a lawnmower trailer.
It's
a pretty fucking sweet lawnmower.
It's like, not only really are you removing all these ridiculous expenses from your life, but so much stress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, when I don't have a $100,000 house, I'm not really as worried about what happens to it.
Got no homeowner's insurance.
Yep.
How's it working out with her in the van? Anything you would have done different?
Surprisingly well. I think that's one reason that I come back to the idea of having a roof vent. But, mm-hmm. I had a bunch of fleece left over just from stuff. I have, like, old sewing projects that I do. And I had a bunch of Polartec fleece that I'd, like, bought in bulk. And I'm like, okay, this is really nice fleece. I don't want to just waste it. Had no idea what I was ever going to do with it. And I had probably 6 yards, maybe, of, like, this dark blue, just whatever, fleece. And ended up using that to make curtains. Because my windows are tinted, but not, like, that tinted. And so I wanted to be able to, you know, basically had them as blackout curtains. But because they're fleece, they make an incredible difference with insulating as well. So, like, a lot of people use, like, Reflectix in the windows. I've just used a fleece. I've been in it in March was the coldest, gotten snowed on. And, I mean, I've been in it in June and July in some pretty hot weather now. And, like, putting those curtains up in the sun or in the cold, it keeps out a ton of the heat. So, like, I can leave her during the day even if it's, you know, 80 degrees out. Obviously, you would never leave a dog in a car if it's 80 degrees out, but I kind of have a system. So I put my windshield reflector up, I put all the curtains up, open the two windows with screens that slide open, and set the fan up in one of those so, like, get some fresh air coming through. And it's remarkable how cool it stays in there. Like, it's at least as cool as outside. And I try to park in the shade, which helps as well. I mean, I was really cautious with leaving her at first, and it'd be like 20 minutes max, and I had to go check the car to make sure that she wasn't overheating. But it's been fine. And at this point, like, I'm pretty comfortable with leaving her for a few hours and make sure she's got her water and she's all set up and have, you know, peace of mind that she's going to be okay. And she's totally chill. I mean, she lives in the van, like, that's her home, so she's totally chill to just hang out in there. She thinks the bed in the back is really her bed. And the passenger seat is, like, that's her seat. She curls up in there. She fits on it just right. If I recline it just a little bit, she can curl up on the passenger seat and ride there while we're driving down the road. It's great. She's got it made. She gets all her toys. She picks up a toy off the ground every once in a while. We'll be driving down the highway, and she'll be sleeping on the back bed. And she'll hop down on the floor and select one of her many toys. And dogs are pretty resilient, I think, and can adjust to different situations, but not all the time. I mean, I've had other dogs that I don't think would have done nearly as well on the road as she has, and having only had her for a month before I moved into the van full time, like, that was definitely taking a risk, but she has been better than I could have imagined by far, for the most part. It's an adventure. We're always getting out and doing something. Find somewhere we can go run around for a couple hours every day. Burn off some of that puppy energy. And then she's great. It's good to just hang out. Stretches out in the back. Snoozes the day away. She likes to sometimes ride. I'll leave the two back windows open. They're like the fold-out kind, flip-out kind. So they're just the bottom cracks open a couple inches. And she'll ride in the back, lays on the back bed, and just, like, hangs her nose out the window as we're driving down the road. Doesn't get that full wind effect of a side window like some dogs do, but she seems all right with it.
My tires just came in. I got the got the text from UPS store a little bit ago.
It.
Four of them that I'm about to take out
on
a dolly.
Separate?
Yeah. I'm wearing these guys out at the UPS store because I had my rotors and pads sent there, and they were like, "Yeah, you're gonna have to come around and get this."
Okay.
Yeah. Like, we got a dolly you can use, but you're gonna have to come around and get this shit. 100-pound packages gotta stop.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's not a cheap mailbox either, but what's nice about it is it gives me a physical address, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, the P.O. box you get at the post office won't count for, like, renewing a driver's license or something, right? Yeah.
You can get an address through UPS.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the things. Like, I called them, and I was just comparing the prices between them and the post office, and I was, it's the big difference anyway. Like, you know, going with you guys, he's like, well, we're friendlier. State to state, that's definitely
that
been a constant.
Sure.
It's like, assholes work at the post office, the DMV, any city-run building or whatever. Yeah, it's just, oh, you're just meeting everybody on their worst day, it seems like.
But UPS is better.
Mm-hmm. And it's
so
a physical address versus a post office box.
A box there? Like, can you get mail delivered there like you would at a post office box and just go pick it up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Got a key.
And it counts as it would count in place of a physical address.
That's what I'm hoping whenever it comes down to it. That's what okay. I'm assuming is also going to dictate some of where I end up in the next couple of years. Is like, I know my citizenship, you know, for Colorado, or not citizenship.
But residency.
Residency, yep. Yeah. You know, it's hard enough just trying to prove yep. you're a resident here when you're like going to school, yep. you have a place, like...
So I've heard there are some states, right, that are a lot easier to be a resident in mm-hmm. and, like, actually make that claim. I've heard, I think one, I don't know if this is true, so don't quote me on it, but one of the easiest is supposed to be, like, South Dakota. And to be a resident in South Dakota, according to the information I've heard, is you have to spend one night in a hotel room there, and you have to keep that receipt and present that receipt, I guess it would be to the DMV, because then you would get a license, and then you're, like, you can be licensed and be a resident of South Dakota Whoa. By spending one night in the state. So, like, a lot of people that go full-time traveling, you know, like, permanently, literally don't have a permanent address, right? But you still need something. You like, you're a U.S. license. Citizen. Yeah, you're a U.S. citizen. You can't actually be a nomad on paper. And I think South Dakota is supposed to be one of the easiest ones that, like, yeah, you definitely don't have to live there. Or have ever lived there to be a resident there.
Right. Been looking into faking my own death. Get around all, oh, this, yeah? all this paperwork stuff. Yeah.
Just go. Be totally off the books the grid. And not have to worry yeah. about it.
Off the grid. I feel
like that would maybe come back to bite you in the ass at some point.
Yeah, I might want to be alive at some point in my life.
Yeah.
No, but I have thought about looking into other countries, and so... There is a good chance my U.S. citizenship could run out here in the next... Or how does that work?
No, you'll does, always be a U.S. Unless you switch it. Would you then be a citizen in both?
These are things I need to look into. Yeah. Because there's definitely some other
countries. I think sometimes it can be canceled. If you become a citizen somewhere else, you would no longer be a U.S. citizen, even okay. though you were born here. I think. But I'm betting that depends on the
What does that even
country.
Mean, though? Like, you can't vote? But do you even have, do right. you have to be and physically if you wanted here to
come, no, but if you wanted to come back here, you would like, then you would need a visa or a green card or something like you would.
Or a sneak in.
Or yeah, you could be an illegal immigrant in the country that you were born in.
Sneak under the southern fence.
Oh God. Put a gate in Trump's wall for you.
I can rappel.
There you go.
And climb. Climb up one side, rappel down
yep.
it.
Yeah. You put the bolt in for everybody else.
Yep.
Set the route.
Yeah, there's definitely some other countries I could see myself checking out for a year or so.
For sure.
Because how much of it, you don't get the real feel of it unless it's on an extended vacation. True. You're just there with the mentality of, well, I'm going to be back home here in a week or 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, and you can't really, like, experience, like, there's first impressions and then there's reality. So you can't really experience a place the way it really is without hanging around for at least a little bit. Mm-hmm. And like we were kind of talking about the other day, it's like you can go into it with the mentality of, you know, you're a visitor there and you experience a place that way. Or you can try and do whatever you can do to experience it the way someone who lives there does. And it's a totally different perspective.
Definitely.
I prefer so that way.
These are my people now.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Even if it's just temporary. Like, this summer when I go places, I try not to experience it as though I'm just passing through. I try to see it, you know, through the eyes of someone who's lived there their whole life and, like, what is this place like for them? Feels like a better way to do it.
And then you don't act like a tourist.
Yeah.
You get that, people get that attitude of, like, well, I'm just passing through.
Yeah.
I don't really have to, like, pay attention to
yep.
you people.
Yep.
Sounds like good words to live by.
You keep a journal?
Off and on. Like, my mom convinced me that it would be a good idea when I deployed to Iraq.
I remember you mentioning that you were, like, looking back through one from there. So yep. you still were, or regularly do.
I need to start now, for sure.
Yeah. Something I struggle with as well. I did really well with it on the trail last summer. I actually kept up with it. It was like a full month and I actually kept up with it. And now I think I'm, last time I updated the journal from this summer was like, about exactly a month ago. It's just, but it's cool to have that like documentation that you can look back on. Mm-hmm. See where you were when and...
Or somebody can look think, back on.
Yeah, someday. Right, right.
'Cause I feel like I never look at my old journals, really, for the most part.
Not life journals, but like...
Experience.
Yeah, like if there's something specific I'm doing that I'm keeping a journal from, like I've looked back on my trail journal, and that's cool to have. You think you remember whatever. You know, you don't remember everything, but you think you remember a good bit, and I always find something new in there.
That's true.
Was this just bare metal in here when you got it?
It was, like plywood.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I made the rough draft of my furniture out of. I, like, took the walls down, and then I cut the rough draft of the countertop out, and my buddy Josh came up, the one who's watching Duke for me, came over to look at it one day and saw that, like, this flimsy countertop was being held on by, like, a tiny, weird-looking block, and there was, like, a skinny little leg in the middle. He was like, "You need some 2x4s or something, man?" And he's like, I got some stuff I can help you out with.
Oh, that's funny.
That's great.
Just a rough draft, guys.
That's a wrap, folks. Thanks for tuning into the Homesick Podcast. Thanks to Michelle for being an awesome first interview guest. And I hope you got something out of our conversation today. Maybe we answered a question you had about van life or living on the road. Have a good one, guys.